And welcome back to Dungeons and Drams. I am R, and sitting across from me, as always, is S. Grab your tankards, people. Today we are digging into Chapter 81, Cleric on Fire. And the title is not a metaphor. Delnus actually goes supernova.
Good to be here. You are completely right. We left off last session right in the thick of it, inside the central spire of Aethryn. The party just defeated Rooney, that chaotic Netherese magical artificial intelligence. The battle was a grind. Delnus stood right in the center of a sunbeam, and this was not just a cosmetic light show. Delnus leveled up and changed his entire clerical domain.
That transition is incredible. Delnus sheds his life domain connection to the sea god persona and takes up the mantle of Lathander, the Morning Lord. Light domain all the way. It incinerates his exhaustion and wipes his wounds away. He becomes this radiant, blue-scaled chosen warrior breathing actual motes of sunlight.
It is such a massive thematic shift. Usually, character domain changes happen between sessions, with some hand-waving or maybe after weeks of deep prayer. The DM does this beautifully in the heat of the moment. Lathander sees an opportunity, steps in, and just reforges the Triton on the spot. Even his old holy symbol melts and reshapes itself.
It completely changes his role. He racks looks over, basically half blind from the glare, and asks if the guy got a sunburn, and Delnus drops the most deadpan, authoritative cleric line possible. When someone asks you if it is lit, say it is lit. Pure gold.
Meanwhile, Porky Rax is suffering the ultimate paladin hangover. Delnus gets an instant refresh and a brand new god, but the big gold dragonborn is completely tapped out. His smites are gone, his muscles ache, and his magical reserves are basically zero. But he does not get a break. He gets a traumatic vision straight out of his Holy Avenger.
That vision sets the tone for the entire chapter. We talk a lot on this show about how paladins draw their power from their oaths. They are fueled by conviction. Herax looks at his sword and sees his old murderer, Tekeli Lee, the gnoll vampire who literally killed him centuries ago. He also sees Glax and Trounce, two former tribe members turned into feral, red-eyed vampire spawn.
Confronting the demons of your past is a huge staple in fantasy, but Aethryn does not let you deal with your ghosts quietly. Instead of Herax getting the closure of hunting them down, enter Scriven Scry. This tall, impeccable Arcanoloth in a suit with a predatory fox head walks right into the scene. The guy adjusts his spectacles like an accountant dealing with an overdue bill.
It is amazing how much intimidation you can radiate by just looking bored. The Arcanoloth does not cast a spell, he just casually flips open the soul tome. A vortex of black nothingness rips the gnoll vampire and the corrupted kobolds apart. He literally sucks their essence into the book and shuts it. Problem contained.
The absolute disrespect. Tekeli Lee has been a lingering nightmare for Herax, a huge narrative boogeyman, and Scriven Scry treats him like an unfiled document. Scriven Scry even looks directly through the vision at Herax. It's a flex, and the implication is huge for Herax mechanically. The only way to recharge his paladin battery is to put Tekeli Lee in the ground forever, which means shattering that soul tome. He has a direct mandate.
I love how the party tackles the physical environment right after this heavy exposition. The chapter does a great job oscillating between epic divine duty and complete party chaos. They need to ascend a 50-foot smooth vertical shaft in the dark. Tookie uses an infusion on his boots and runs up the wall effortlessly. Gnome artificial practicality for the win. He drops a rope. Simple, effective.
And then we get Doug. Doug Woolwine, wearing his indestructible jorts of the Golden Age. Doug currently carries the Dragon Tear egg in a heavy satchel, and the AI just gassed him up about being a temporal anomaly of source energy. So Doug naturally assumes gravity is beneath him now. He prepares himself to soar gracefully up a dark tube like a majestic arcane overlord.
Doug trying to levitate might be my favorite moment. He gives it a mighty jump and manages an impressive 14 feet of vertical height before absolutely pancaking back into the cold stone. Doug decides to ask Professor Scant if flying is possible here. Scant politely explains the Netherese considered stairs gauche. But sadly, the machinery in the shaft is broken.
The pompous nature of the sentient crystal sphere explaining that taking stairs was seen as a peasant activity really grounds us back into the ancient wizard empire setting.
But let us skip back up the shaft, where the actual horror elements are waiting for Tuki. This pristine oval hallway is beautiful, freezing, and heavily trapped.
Tuki pulls himself up and finds an invisible barrier under an ice dome protecting the area. On top of some heavy double doors, there is a glowing green crystal acting as the keystone. However, all that goes out the window when Tuki notices the two floating anomalies, 6-foot-long, pitch-black, jagged swords floating in the air.
Let us do a little deep dive on those right now. These are living blades of disaster. In spellcaster terms, the Blade of Disaster is a terrifying 9th-level conjuration spell that mimics a planar rift. It usually requires concentration, moves as a bonus action, and deals unbelievable force damage on hit. Making them living, permanent entities means Tuki is staring at literal autonomous tears in reality.
That is absolute nightmare fuel. Anything with force damage essentially ignores standard armor. It bypasses steel by shredding your physical atomic structure. When Delnis hauls himself up, Tuki knows immediately that things are bad. Tuki lies straight to his face, telling Delnis the living rifts probably just want to shake his hand. Pure deflection through humor.
This sparks an incredibly convoluted and hilarious chain of actions from the party artificer. Tuki reaches into his chimeric bag of tricks, which the group alchemically upgraded. He throws down a little fuzzball inside the dome. It transforms into a giant badger, but the poor creature is highly unstable. It is literally an organic bomb, sloshing with glowing volatile reagents.
The concept is solid. Deploy an explosive proxy to fight the planar threats. Unfortunately, Tuki forgets about the impenetrable, invisible force wall layered beneath the visible ice dome. He lobs a Tangler grenade at the threats outside. It bounces straight off the magic glass and detonates directly at his own feet. It glues Tuki, Delnis, and this tragic glowing badger to the stone.
A beautifully executed disaster. One of the blades slips smoothly through the magical barrier without pausing. It passes directly through Delnis, causing terrifying damage that nearly takes the new cleric out of the fight right out of the date. Meanwhile, Hyrax arrives at the top of the shaft right on cue. What he sees is absolute bedlam.
From Hyrax's perspective, he peeks over the edge to see his two buddies trapped in sticky webbing with a distended radioactive animal under attack from literal black holes. True to form, the paladin steps up. He leans back and drops a breath attack, hitting them with shadow fire. It incinerates the resin, and since both heroes are basically fire resistant, they brush off the burns.
That perfectly enables Tuki to perform one of the craziest escapes. He scoops up the glowing mutant badger, clicks his cape, and blinks across the room via a dimension door. Tuki plops the badger down in front of the advancing doom swords and runs away to preserve himself. The rift touches the badger and boom, critical mass. We get an epic shockwave.
The ensuing concussive force rocks the room. The heat, the blast wave, the cinematic debris falling everywhere. And yet, the wall of force manages to hold up against it. But here is the classic mechanical twist the party uncovers through chaos. The heavy shaking knocks the glowing green crystal keystone loose from the pedestal.
We love a well-telegraphed puzzle mechanic. Tuki instantly uses a hook shot, like some gnome spelunker straight out of a video game. He snatches the crystal midair with pinpoint precision, and in total defiance of all elegance, hurls the gem blindly at the void spell. It shatters against the floor. That destroys the wall of force perfectly according to plan, even if the plan was incredibly panicked.
With the barrier dropped, it becomes a desperate melee slugfest against these reality rifts. Delnis, still reeling, casts his signature spirit guardians. Angelic shapes start fighting the dark voids. He immediately throws a healing word to basically duct tape his celestial essence back together. But Hyrax completely takes over this fight. He steps into the line of fire.
Keep in mind, Hyrax is spent. He has no extra divine juice. This is sheer muscle, equipment, and grim determination. He starts hacking. He throws a heavy blow with his Holy Avenger, injecting literal trapped starlight straight into absolute nothingness. Then follows up with a punch from his pick of pass wall, embedding the steel right in the entity.
The crescendo happens next. He slides the giant greatsword back into his whisper web scabbard for an Aejitsu draw technique. He shifts his stance, lets out a lung full of golden sparks, and draws in a blinding flash. It perfectly cleaves the dark mass of nothingness directly in half. Watching an artificial magical spell implode on itself gives great visual payoff. He completely erases one problem.
Tuki mirrors this level of damage by expending almost an entire day's resources at once. He fires up all three daily charges in the Ring of the Ram. A massive spectral animal skull just brutally collides with the second void, blasting it away. Tuki flips over backward, draws a blunderbuss mid-rotation, and puts a perfectly placed sneak attack bullet right in its weakened structure. The blade shatters completely into harmless dark dust.
This encounter moves so quickly once the bindings are down. Within basically seconds, they remove a level 9 spell threat. Just a few heartbeats of absolute violence, and then the icy oval hall is entirely quiet again. It is exactly then that Doug decides to finish ascending the rope using sheer mundane arm strength.
Pure comedic timing. Doug climbs over the edge of the pit after all the alarms and explosives stop, totally unscathed. He tells them good job on the teamwork and genuinely reaffirms that he can probably still fly, given another chance. The man is completely oblivious to the trauma around him, existing happily in a golden era of his own mind.
That moment leads to the critical climax of the chapter. They survive. They drop their guard. The adrenaline drops. Tuki leans against a cold stone wall, looks at his blood and soot-covered friends, and quite reasonably pitches a long rest. Find a safe room, jam a piton under a heavy door, and sleep for 8 straight hours to restore spell slots.
It is such a tempting concept. Resting after you empty your resources on a random floor of the tower. But we must circle back to the central theme from the beginning of this episode. Aethryn is not a tavern, and the enemies waiting up ahead do not observe standard downtime hours.
Hirax realizes that letting their momentum cool off here will get them all murdered. He grips his glowing holy sword. No peace at all in this place. Aethryn eats people. He lays down an undisputed final mandate. We open the doors. No sleeping. They must deal with their destiny in real time.
The Null Vampire is inside a soul prison directly above them. Tuki takes the command brilliantly. He chambers another heavy shell into his mechanical blunderbuss with a tired sigh, accepts the fact he is running on fumes, and gives the most incredible exit line of the session. Let us go kill a librarian. The contrast between an ancient, undead evil wizard and a stuffy, middle-management Arcanoloth really highlights the absurdity of the Forgotten Realms.
Absolutely. Perfectly stated. Tuki resigning to fight without magic, and Hirax pushing purely on holy anger makes for stellar Dungeons & Dragons tension. Thank you all for joining us on Dungeons & Drams. We will be right back next time to see exactly what lies behind those cursed heavy doors.